plate a potential nugget.
So let's start with your journey, Dr. Guha, and I want to sort of go back to maybe your choice to go to IIM Calcutta as a fellow IIM alumnus. I was curious. After your undergrad degree, I would have thought a traditional path would have been to maybe go to a Harvard or an Oxbridge or even a JNU or a DU for a master's. So why IIMC to pursue your PhD?
That will require a rather long explanation because I joined IIM when I was 22 and I'd made many choices before that, most of which had gone nowhere. So I was born in Dehradun. My father was a scientist. My mother was a high school teacher. And I was born in Dehradun. And I grew up obsessed with cricket. And I wanted to play cricket for India. I was the best bowler in my school team. And then I joined St. Stephen's College to play cricket. I come from a family of scientists. My father has a PhD in science. My grandfather, my uncle, my aunts, really, and some very distinguished scientists. And I was passable at science, but I had been told that if I went to university to do science, practicals would be in the afternoon and I could not play cricket. So I was looking for a humanities subject. At that stage, I liked writing. I had got some prizes in school for my essays. I was editing a school magazine, one of the school magazines. But English back in the 1970s for an orthodox middle class family was regarded as only for women who got married. So it was impossible for me to, and I knew nothing about history then. So someone told me economics is a humanities subject and classes end at 12 and you can play cricket. So I joined St. Stephen's College. Fortunately, my marks were good enough to get into economics, which is the most prestigious course in St. Stephen's. So I joined in 1974. And within a week, I realized that economics was not for me, that I simply did not understand indifference curves and multipliers because I do not have an abstract or mathematical mind. But I was playing cricket, and my college had the best college team in India. St. Stephen's College team at that stage. So my captain, Arun Lal, played 18 test matches for India. Kirti Azad, who was 2 years junior to me and with whom I played 3 years, was part of our 1983 World Cup team. Rajinder Amarnath, the youngest of the Amarnath brothers who played Duleep Trophy, was with us. So Rajinder Singh Hans, who was a left-arm spinner and a reserve for India, was in our team. Piyush Pandey, now an icon of Indian advertising, but at that stage, the Rajasthan Ranji Trophy wicketkeeper was my wicketkeeper. So I was playing very good cricket for 5 years.
When you say you were the captain of the
team? No, I was the bowler, so I used to take my catches. The captain was Arun Lal and then Piyush Pandey and others, right? And Kirti Azad. So I played cricket for 5 years, and college cricket in those days was very competitive. So you practiced every day from 2 to 5. You played matches on Saturday, Sunday. The inter-college competition was 3-day, 4-day, 5-day final. So your life was consumed by cricket. And the college authorities were indulgent because it was the most prestigious sport and we had the best team and we were used to beat our rivals, Hindu College. So it didn't matter if you had 30% attendance in kind of economics, right? So I did a BA, got through with a second division. And my father, who's a very unusual kind of educated Indian, was not disappointed I got a second class. I told him I want to do an MA simply to play cricket, 2 more years of cricket and enjoy university life. He said university life is about, not necessarily about studies. So I joined the Delhi School of Economics to do an MA and to continue to play cricket for St.
Wow.
Now, I had already kind of begun to realize that my cricketing career had plateaued. You know, I was in the best college team in India, but I was, you know, the fourth best bowler in that team. I used to bat at number 10 and I was absolutely the worst fielder. So I was at most, I don't even think I could have played for Tripura in the Ranji Trophy. So basically, I was a decent college cricketer and no more. Here I was stuck with an MA in economics. So happened that while I was doing my MA, I got a research grant from the Delhi School. I had an uncle. This is a family connection. My uncle used to work in HAL, Hindustan Aeronautics, and he knew of a factory in Orissa, in Sunabeda, in the tribal belt. And he said, "Why don't you do? We want to study on how the tribal workers there are doing." So I got a grant in the summer holidays between my MA previous and my MA final, and went do this research project on the efficiency of tribal workers. I knew some rudimentary statistics because I had done 4 years of economics. So I essentially ran a regression comparing tribal workers to non-tribal workers and found they were as efficient, but they were massively underrepresented in the workforce. That Here was a very typically carelessly conceived development project. We said we are bringing development to a tribal area, but not skilling tribals to be employed in profitable employment. Right. Now, in the course of that research in Koraput, someone told me, actually a veterinary scientist called Dr. Das, who helped change my life, told me, you know, you're a young man, you come from outside here. Do you know someone called Verrier Elvin? No, sorry. I have to backtrack a bit. In my last week, the PRO of the HAL factory said, you have been here for 2 months. Do you want to go to a tribal village? So he took me to the tribal village where there was this veterinary doctor who saw me and said, you've come from far away. Have you heard of a man called Verrier Elvin? I said, no. And he said, well, he was an anthropologist from England and he worked among tribals here. So I was intrigued. I went back to my college library and found Elvin's autobiography. Now, Elvin was an extraordinary figure. He was born in England in 1902, son of a colonial bishop. He took 2 first-class degrees in Oxford, was disenchanted by the church, came to India, joined Gandhi, left the church and started working with Adivasis and married an Adivasi girl and did the great pioneering studies of Central Indian tribes, their folklore, their music, their attitude to the forest and so on. He became an Indian citizen. He advised Nehru on tribal affairs and a very unusual, colorful man. So I said, look, now this is very interesting. Sociology, anthropology deals with human beings, not with graphs and charts and equations and numbers. It seems to appeal to me. I like this guy's work. I always liked writing. Even in college, I was editing the college magazine. I was reading. But I had 2 low second-class degrees in my economics, my BA and my MA. I had 57 in my BA and 52 in my MA, or maybe 51. Which meant, if I wanted to study to shift to sociology, admission in Delhi University or JNU was ruled out, let alone a foreign scholarship. Now, it so happened that when I was at the Delhi School doing an MA, there was someone who had a junior lecturer there, who is now quite well known as a public intellectual, whose writings I'm sure you would have read, called Shiv Vishwanathan. Okay. So Shiv was 6 or 7 years senior to me. I was my MA, he had already completed his PhD, he was a junior lecturer. We used to chat in the coffee house and I told him I'm reading Elvin and economics is not for me. I'm interested in sociology. What do I do? So Shiv said, look, your grades are bad, so we can't give you admission. But my friend Anjan Ghosh, who is brilliant, is teaching at IIM Calcutta. That's all he told me. And I think they may have a PhD program in sociology. So I went blind. And I went to IIM only because Shiv, I got admission. Now, why? So, you know, how I got admission is also an interesting story. So I went there and it was the only department that would give me admission and a scholarship. And they were quite happy to have me because the IIM Calcutta, unlike the other IIMs, had a specialist social science program. They had a PhD program in economics, sociology and regional development, where unlike the normal FPM in IIM Ahmedabad, you did not have to do marketing and finance. You do 2 years of coursework on your subject. With the only compulsory courses were 2 in statistics, 1 in maths, and 1 in computer science. And everyone else who had applied that year for a PhD in IIM Calcutta came from a sociology background, whereas I'd come from an economics background. So the people thought, look, this guy will at least pass these compulsory courses and not be kicked out of the program. So that's how I landed up there. Now, from my first week studying economics, I knew this was not for me. From my first fortnight studying sociology, I knew this was for me. I mean, the faculty was mediocre except Anjan Ghosh, but there was a great library and I was greatly enjoying what I was reading. Life in the IIM hostel was rather strange because everyone else was interested in jobs in multinationals, and, you know,
the corporate sector.
And so I had very few people to talk to. Unlike in St. Stephen's, where I was to play cricket for the college, I did the college magazine, ran the bridge club, and I was very gregarious. But when you're forced to be on your own, you reflect and think and internalize much more. And it was very early training, good training for anyone who wants to be a writer. You know, solitude is very important for scholarship and writing, or for any creative field, right? Of that kind. So that's how I did a PhD. My PhD was supposed to be a sociological study of the Chipko movement in the Himalaya, doing field work. I got more interested in the history, went to the archives, found a long tradition of peasant resistance to state forest management dated to the 19th century, and I moved from sociology to history. So it was really a chapter of accidents, and I'm grateful to IIM for giving me a home. But I must say that in my 4 or 5 years in the place, I was completely out of odds with the institutional culture, and especially the hostile attitude. You know, placement season comes, and who's going to get into McKinsey, and who's going to get into Citibank?
Left me totally unmoved.
Got it.
A couple of things struck me in this piece. First, Dr. Guha talks about the role of chance in the way some of the transitions happened, especially the section where he talks about how a chance introduction to Anjan Ghosh leads him to a PhD in IIM Calcutta. In my work and in other conversations in the podcast as well, I've come to realize that careers are not as linear as they seem to be from a distance. There's a big role of chance in the way some of the careers are shaped. The related piece that struck me was how Dr. Guha recounts his inner journey of disconnect with economics at St. Stephen's, his passion for sociology, and the disconnect again with the peer group at IIM Calcutta. I find the first few years of our career give us interesting data points for us to mull over and course correct as we go through our journey. But however, I find that several people get into the mode of "I ought to be doing this because I graduated from here" mindset. But being true to yourself and really listening to your inner voice does open pathways that often make sense for us in the long run. Ensuring that we keep listening to our inner voice and giving that voice a seat on the table when it comes to making crucial decisions is key, I guess. Thank you for listening. And apologies for the audio being a little noisy. Dr. Guha and I had this conversation in the outdoors in the pleasant Bangalorean winter, but we couldn't put the construction worker at a neighboring site or the birds on mute. Hope that did not come in the way of the listening experience. For more podcast content curated by theme, please visit playtopotential.com and visit the curated playlist section. To know more about the leadership advisory work I do, please visit the About section at playtopotential.com.